those that are staying here, turn to Psalm 112. This is not really the text I would have chosen, but maybe after we read it a second, you'll understand why I chose it. Psalm 112. Starting in verse 1. Praise ye the Lord. Blessed is the man that feareth the Lord, that delighteth greatly in His commandments. His seed shall be mighty upon earth. The generation of the upright shall be blessed. Wealth and riches shall be in his house, and his righteousness endureth forever. And you can go ahead and read about the wealth and the riches that are going to be in the house of the righteous. I've dealt with some people, some Christians, who actually believe that poverty is a sin. Maybe you've heard of that. I've actually read a book on how to build a mega church. How to build a mega church. And one of the things that's very clear in that book is you don't be badgering people about their sins. You need to be positive. You need to talk about, good things. And I have figured it out. It is true that if you want people to be encouraged when they come to church, you don't sit there and wag the finger at them and tell them, you guys are covetous, you guys are sinful, you guys are whatever, it's not going to work. And so I thought I'd be positive today. No, I just want you to notice, I'm not going to be altogether positive, I can promise you that. I just want you to notice here, this is a verse that says, if you fear God and keep His commandments, you're going to be wealthy. Isn't that what that says? Blessed is the man that feareth the Lord, that delighteth greatly in His commandments. His seed shall be mighty upon earth. The generation of the upright shall be blessed. Wealth and riches shall be in his house, and his righteousness endureth forever. Now, does that mean that if you live right, do right, you have the promise that God is going to make you wealthy? I've heard, go ahead, we can go for that, that's fine. Lazarus went to heaven when he died, but was he wealthy? No, in fact, there's an awful lot of poor people that God says these are righteous, and the Bible talks about the people who are oppressed, and you read over there in Hebrews chapter 11 about the faithful, and like the first 25 verses are talking about people who had great victories, but then it has another 6 or 8 verses of people who had everything go wrong. And yet they were also blessed. They were also the faithful. So, what kind of promise can we expect? What can we demand? What can we say that if I live righteously, I'm going to be blessed? I'm going to be physically, materially blessed. I'm going to have stuff if I live righteous. I want you to notice here it says, blessed is the man that feareth the Lord, that delighteth greatly in His commandments. It did not say, blessed is the man that delighteth greatly in stuff. And that's what we're dealing with here. What we're dealing with here is what God calls covetousness. And I can define it the best I know how, is an obsession with possessions. So, delighting greatly in things, material things, delighting greatly in stuff. And I would say that most of us would have to say, that's us. I mean, we're Americans. I mean, we're Americans. We're in the Laodicean church area. We have this idea, we're rich and we're increased with goods and we have need of nothing, right? We can pat ourselves on the back. There's an awful lot of verses that point this out to give you this idea. However, when we deal with the idea of covetousness, we come upon a real brick wall. It's a very difficult thing to apply. Look at a couple of verses. Look at Ephesians chapter 3. I'm sorry, Ephesians chapter 5. If I wanted, and I do, I'd like to have a mega church, folks. I wouldn't mind that. Let's go for having a mega church. Let's go for a mega church, though, that doesn't compromise on any doctrines And that doesn't, you know, that doesn't say just what you want to hear. Let's have that kind of a mega church. Yeah. Those have existed, by the way. There have been some real revivals in time where thousands of people get saved and there was no compromise involved. So don't give up. It might happen. Ephesians chapter 5. Look at verse 1. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love, as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given Himself for an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not once be named among you, as becometh saints. Notice he lumps in covetousness with uncleanness and fornication as some serious heavyweight sins that should never even once be named in our congregation. That not one of us should ever be able to be confused, accused of being covetous. And so now we start feeling real small. Oh, man, Lord. Because I feel covetous. You know? So how do you apply that? Keep reading. It says, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, doesn't say anything about covetous women, who is an idolater. Covetous man who is an idolater hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. No covetous people in heaven. That's like a sucker punch right to the gut. It's like saying, well, wait a minute. I mean, seriously. So we wind up, and then we start reading where the Bible talks about covetousness and this preoccupation with things, this desire of what the Bible calls this greed for gain, this desire for, or what he says, the love of money, and the wanting more stuff, and the piling on, and the abundance, and the focus on it. This is covetousness, and we are all somewhat guilty. And it makes me wonder if, you know, if it requires us to pat ourselves on the back and say, it's okay, the way we are is okay, God's not upset at us. Well, it says over there, and I'm going to have to read it, see if I can find it. It's in, look at Hosea chapter 12. Just to give you that. Hosea chapter 12, look at verse 8. And Ephraim said, yet I am become rich. I have found me out substance. In all my labors they shall find none iniquity in me that were sin. You see, what happens is if you get a lot of stuff and you feel, you know, pretty prosperous and everything goes well, you start patting yourself on the back and thinking, there's nothing wrong. I have need of nothing. I'm okay. I mean, God's blessed me, right? It is a confusion. Look at Habakkuk 2, verse 9. It's a little smaller book, a little more difficult to find. Just keep going right. If you hit Matthew, go back. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 9. Woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. Well, now what in the world is wrong with that? What is wrong with having your nest? What is wrong with setting yourself, you know, getting yourself set up so that you cannot be hurt by evil? Isn't that what it is? Isn't that what riches is? Isn't it a security? Isn't it some sort of a protection? Is there anything wrong with setting yourself up so that, you know, in case we have another depression, we're okay? You say, there can't be anything wrong with that, can there? Now, if I really wanted us to feel good, we could just say, let's forget that. However, if I read the Bible right, and I think I am, I'm reading it right, God has an awful lot of stuff to say about covetousness. He doesn't like it. He says he hates it. He says it's an attitude that he actually calls it idolatry. And we have to get into that to explain what it is. But there is something we have to correct first. We've got to make ourselves clear on something. And that is, we looked last week on what covetousness is, and it's kind of disheartening. And yet now we're going to have to look, because, you know, we want to be a megachurch, we're going to have to look on what it is not. We're going to have to pat ourselves on the back a little bit. I think it's necessary. What covetousness is not? It's not hard work. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Covetousness is not someone who works really hard. Ecclesiastes, there's a number of them in Ecclesiastes we could read. Look at chapter 2, look at verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. There's nothing better. There's nothing better than working hard and enjoying what you work for. And he's talking about under the sun. Obviously, there are a lot of things in heaven that are better. But seriously, in our lifetime here on earth, there is no better enjoyment than working hard and enjoying the fruit of your labors. That's better even than getting stuff free. It's actually better to work hard and make a good living and enjoy the fruit of your labors. That's better than winning the lottery. That's way better. You see what the lottery is now? They're big, mega, whatever lottery nowadays. I saw it just advertised. Nobody claimed it. And say it's $500 million. Is there something obscene about $500 million dropped on some poor folks? I'm telling you, that's bad. I mean, if it was $1 million, it'll ruin them. But $550 million? Are you kidding me? That doesn't even make sense. That's an obscene amount you cannot even imagine. I don't know, you stack up $1 bills that are that $550 million, who knows where it'll go. It'll go a long way out into space. All right. There's several other. Look at Ecclesiastes 3:13. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. Enjoy the gift. Enjoy the fruit of your labor. It's the gift of God. You work hard. You earn a living. You make a good living, and you buy yourself a place, and you enjoy the fruit of your labors. That's good. It's the gift of God. So that's not what he's talking about when he's talking about covetousness. You can breathe now. You can breathe a sigh of relief. You're okay. Right? That's not what he's talking about. Look at Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, look at verse, let me see. It's toward the end of the chapter. Look at verse 28. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good that he may have to give to him that needeth. It's not wrong to have. How can you give to the poor if you don't have? Don't you have to have before you can give? I mean, it's not fair to give somebody else's stuff. You know, that's what a whole lot of charitable organizations are. They want you to give to them so that they can give. And what the Bible talks about charity is not charitable organizations where you have fundraising drives, but it's where you take of your stuff that you have and you help out those that are needy. And that's a very good thing. It's a whole lot different if I start raising money saying I want you people to give to me so that I can distribute it. That's a different thing. But I'm not going to get into charity right now. Just notice that you can have. Look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Keep in the back of your mind, no matter how much he tells you, this is okay, you can pat yourself on the back, you got a good living, you've worked hard, you got a retirement, you got a nest egg, you're okay. Keep in the back of your mind that God does have something against covetousness. But this is the positive message here. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 11. And that you study to be quiet and to do your own business and to work with your own hands as we commanded you. There are several others. Look at Proverbs chapter 13, verse 11. Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 11. Says, wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. Now, is there anybody here that can confuse this, that God is not against you working hard and making money? God is not against you working hard and making money. That's not what he considers. That's not what he considers covetousness. He's talking about covetousness all the way through the Bible. He's criticizing it, and we as Americans cringe when we think about it. When we hear what God has to say about it, we think, wow, I'm guilty. What can I do? What do I do? We feel like, well, maybe what we ought to do is sell everything and give to the poor. Didn't he tell that to the rich young ruler? Sell everything, give it to the poor, and be a mendicant friar. Walk around begging the rest of your life. That's not what he said. He tells you all the time, work. Work hard. Enjoy the fruit of your labor. That's another point, that covetousness is not the idea of private property. Private property is a biblical concept. Amen. We're not communists. We're not socialists. We don't think everything belongs to everybody. You can have private property. The Bible talks about private property, something that's yours. You're not quite convinced? Look at Proverbs chapter 19. Look at verse 14. We're in Proverbs real close. 19:14, a house and riches are the inheritance of fathers, and a prudent wife is from the Lord. I just threw that in there to make Debbie feel good. Prudent wife is of the Lord. It says house and riches are the inheritance of fathers. Wow, that's property. That's something that's yours, and you get to pass it down to your children. It doesn't just revert to the state. It doesn't all belong to everybody. That's not the way it is. Our socialist idea nowadays that, you know, we need to take from the rich and distribute to the poor, that's not biblical. Now, there was some voluntary doing of that in the book of Acts and other places. There was some voluntary doing of that, but there was no government doing that as if it was the principle that has to be done. It's a matter of, you know, seeing a need and taking care of that need. And they were extraordinarily not covetous in that first church. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I've seen people who get that spirit. I've seen it happen. I've seen churches get that spirit of revival where nothing that they had did they consider dear to them. They just sell it and give it away. I've seen people give away cars. I've seen people give away houses. I've seen the people just give things away. Give it into God. Give it into the missions. Give it into something. I've seen that happen. Why? Because, you know, you get excited. But the Bible doesn't say anything against having personal property. Or owning something. Look at Matthew chapter 20. I won't read the whole parable. I'll just read the pertinent verse. Look at verse 15. Well, look at verse 14. Take that thine is and go thy way. I will give unto this last, even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Personal property. You own stuff. It's yours. God decrees it. God says, that's what I believe. I believe that if you earn with your labor your own things and you've gotten yourself stuff, that stuff is yours. It's your personal property. That's not covetousness. God doesn't have anything against you having something that is yours. That you can call your own. How about somebody says, well, wait a minute, doesn't Jesus say, take no thought? Let's read that. Matthew chapter 6. We're in Matthew. Let's go right over there real easy. Matthew chapter 6. Look at verse 19. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Isn't Jesus telling you not to have personal possessions? Not to lay up? Not to store up stuff? Is that what he's saying? Isn't he telling you, watch out where your heart is? Don't be laying up your treasure. Don't make at your treasure. So it's talking about a hard issue. And there's other things right there in that same chapter. Look at verse 25. Well, look at verse 24. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body more than raiment? Behold the fowls of the air, they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns. Is there something wrong with gathering into barns? if you're any kind of a farmer, you know you're going to have to gather into the barn. It's got to be done. But he says right here, they don't even gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Isn't what God's saying is, don't work, don't farm, don't plant, just wander around the world and expect God to feed you by ravens.
Ravens.
Okay, Susan, ravens. Elijah was fed by ravens. Look, the idea is Jesus is giving us some understanding of what's important in life and the spiritual outlook that we're supposed to have. And yet, some people will take this to the point of saying, well, it's wrong then to gather up. It's wrong to lay up treasures. But they're mistaken. They're taking something here that might be hard to apply in every case and overlooking a principle of life that's found throughout the Bible. And the principle of life throughout the Bible is you work hard, you gather up, you protect, you leave an inheritance to your children, and that's a good life. It's a gift of God. That's a principle found all the way through the Bible. For example, provision for the future. Provision for the future. Look at 1 Timothy 5. This is New Testament doctrine. 1 Timothy 5. Verse 8. But if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. You do realize what that's saying. And it's talking to women too, not just the men. But men, you guys are providers. You're supposed to provide for your own. You get married, you got an obligation, you're going to be providing for that. And let me tell you something, providing for them doesn't mean they go cold and hungry and unclothed. That's not what providing is. And providing isn't just being there. Providing is giving them the stuff that they need. That means giving them a roof over their heads and clothes to wear. If your children are hungry, you're failing. He says if you don't provide for your own family, he tells you the church is not going to be charged. The church will let them starve. Now, the believers in the church ought to not let them starve, but the church itself, the funds out of our general fund, is not going to go to pay for your children. It's a principle found right here. But see how he's telling you to provide for your own? You got to work hard. You got to put some money in the bank. You've got to own a house. You've got to do something because that's what God says. This is a necessary function of life. You have to provide for your own. Look at 2 Corinthians 12. A few pages backwards. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Look at verse 14. Behold, the third time I am ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. Look at that word, lay up. You know what that means, right? It means save. It means accumulate. It means gather into barns. It means put it together and get the deed on it and make sure everything is in good shape so that your children are provided for and taken care of. That is what it says. Proverbs, I don't know if we already read that one. Proverbs 13, there's several in Proverbs, so I'm going to read it again. Proverbs 13, verse 22 says, a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Well, now how can a good man do that if he's not allowed to save? If he's not allowed to own? If he's not allowed to accumulate wealth? And how many wonderful Christians or believers in the Bible were wealthy? Job was wealthy. Abraham was wealthy. Jacob was wealthy. These people were wealthy. Job was the greatest man in the East. How could that be if God had something against hard work, diligence, faithfulness, preparation, wisdom, putting together, keeping, and leaving an inheritance for your children? So you see, Americans are okay, right? We're okay. Pat yourselves on the back. Go ahead. Personal property is absolutely right. How about independence? Doesn't it require you to have your own stuff so that you can be independent of your parents? You shouldn't be living with your parents all your life, right? It's true that parents ought to lay up for their children, but when their children get to a certain age, they need to strike out on their own and build their own. Doesn't the Bible say, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they start a whole new thing going? That's what it says. And I'm not preaching to anybody. If you're living with your parents, that's okay. I'm going to let you figure that out on your own. But I'm just saying there is a principle here. It's called independence. Let's read it just for fun. Look at Genesis chapter 30. Genesis chapter 30. This is Jacob speaking. For it was little, talking to Laban, for it was little which thou hadst before I came, and it is now increased unto a multitude. Jacob had been working for Laban and had made him rich. And the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. And now, he says, when shall I provide for mine own house also? It's an irrefutable argument. Jacob says, I've worked for you, my father-in-law, all these years. I've taken care of you. Now it's time for me to take care of me. It's time for me to take care of my family. It's to provide for my own. Look at 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Look at verse 10. For even when we were with you, we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now then that are such, we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. There is a principle. This is an important point that God is saying. You work, you make your own money, you provide for your own house, and you eat your own bread. Now, I know, we can criticize all the people who get a check from the government by these kind of verses. And I'm really not trying to get into that. You just need to realize the principle is true here. You have a responsibility to provide your own way, to pull your own weight, to pay your own bills. You have a responsibility. Everybody, all of us do. You get to a certain age, you are expected to get out and make your own way. You're expected to pay your own way. You're expected to provide, to buy your own gasoline, to pay your own rent or your own mortgage or whatever it is that you've got going. You've got to do that yourself. And you do it by your own labor. And that is not covetousness. It's a desire for independence. It's a desire to be the man or the woman God called you to be. That's the desire. It's an natural, healthy, wholesome thing to want all these things. To want that independence. To want to gather up. To want to accumulate. To want to have some savings. To want to have a nest egg. To want to have a retirement. This is all important. Why? Because you don't want to be a burden on your children. You want to provide for them, not take from them. Now, admittedly, throughout history, there have been some huge setbacks in economies where it didn't work out. Your children were starving. And if my children were starving, I would beg. Sure, I would. I would beg. You know, and there's a principle. I don't want to be a beggar. I'm ashamed to be a beggar, and I don't want to be a beggar. I want to work hard. But, you know, if my children are starving, what? What? I gotta take care of them. I got to make sure that they're not hungry, right? And so, yeah, I understand that. And maybe you're in that situation right now. Maybe, you know, who knows? I don't know your personal situation. But you're in a situation where you can't provide for yourself. And so you're taking an exception. And that's fine. Understand it. It's an exception. There is a principle here that's important. And the principle is provide for yourself. Work hard. Do something. I will tell you this. A guy told me the other day, he says, well, I believe the government ought to take care of the poor. And I said, well, I think they ought to take care. I don't think anybody should starve, but I don't think the government should send a check to anybody. I know that's ultra right wing, whatever. I don't know. And I am not right wing political or anything. I honestly despise the whole political spectrum. I despise it because they're completely ignoring what's important in life. They're fighting for everything that's not important. But I do not believe that's the job of government to send checks to people. I believe if there's somebody starving, we ought to have soup kitchens. We ought to make sure they're not starving. We ought to deliver them some food. Everybody in here ought to be paying attention to their neighbors and not let anybody starve. Seriously. Let's not let anybody starve. And there were times here in America, we don't suffer from that very much, but there would have been times in the world where people really were in danger of starving. And they've starved. They're starving right now in certain areas in the world. And that's a tragedy. And unfortunately, charitable organizations can't really solve the problem. They help a little bit, but they can't really solve the problem. And I know this somewhat firsthand. I've worked in that. I worked with Dr. Cocking in Guatemala, and we distributed. We got food delivered to us, truckloads, and we went out and distributed it. We built houses for people and what have you. I'm telling you, there is a limit to what people can do to help people who are starving. There is a limit. But this is what you can do. You can pay attention to your neighbors. You can look around and see what's going on, and you see someone that is in true need. Well, yes, take care of them. How kind of a Christian are you? You let somebody starve next door to you? That's not right. Still, at the same time, it's not covetousness to have your own stuff. It's not covetousness to have plenty and to accumulate and to gather up wealth and whatever. Yet there is covetousness involved in people who have that. There's something there that gets under God's skin and says, I don't like that. We'll deal with that in a minute. Look at something else you need to consider. Look at Matthew. Look at the idea of profit. Some people think, you know, profit is wrong. They're so socialistic, communistic. The idea of profit is wrong. And it's possible that an obscene profit is wrong, especially if you're taking advantage of a bad situation. But look at some verses. Look at Proverbs 14:23. Proverbs 14:23. In all labor there is profit. But the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury. In all labor there is profit. The idea of labor is profit. Actually, that's probably an exaggeration to say in all labor there is profit. I have done some labor that I thought was completely lost. Absolutely lost every last bit of it and had to start over. But you know, there was profit in some sense. There was profit in that I learned, don't do that again. Now, if you're still doing the same thing, well, then maybe there is no profit in your labor. But, you know, you do learn after you mess up and lose everything. You think, you know, I'm not going to go down that road again. And that wisdom is priceless. That's really useful. That's priceless. Look at Matthew 25, verse 14. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. You know what that's called, right? That's called profit. That's gain. If you had 5 talents, you did some trading. You did some buying, you did some selling, you did some, you know, moving, you did some, you know, I don't know, you invested that and you came back, whatever, and you wound up with double. Wow, that's great. And likewise, he that had received 2. But he that had received 1, look at verse 18, went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5, going down, his Lord says, well done. Look at verse 24. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hadst not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid and went and hid thy talent in the earth. And lo, here thou hast, that is thine. Here you have your stuff. This is yours, Lord. This is what you gave me, and I'm giving it back to you. And you know, he didn't steal it. He didn't waste it. He didn't lose it. There it is. Hand it all back to him. Well, how in the world can anybody complain with that? Here, you got it back. His Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant. Thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest, therefore, to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Interest. I would have at least gotten 5%. Now, I want you to understand here what he's saying. He is saying here that he expected people who received from him, he expected them to work and trade and be wise and take some risks and do some things and come back with a profit. Now, what happens if this fellow with just the one talent, which obviously had less ability than the others because he only got one talent, and he said he's given them to according to their ability, he knew he didn't have a lot of ability, so what happens if he had invested that money and lost it all? Well, I have a feeling he would not have been called a wicked and slothful servant. You're supposed to, you have to take risks, right? If you lose it all, you can't keep investing it. He might have said, you know, you weren't very wise, but he wouldn't have called him wicked and slothful. You see, the idea God is saying, you ought to be making a profit. Profit's not wrong. Making money is not wrong. Having a savings account is not wrong. Owning a house is not wrong. Owning two cars is not wrong. Owning 150 might be. But owning two is probably not wrong. There is a point where we have to pat ourselves on the back and say, no, this is not it. This is not what God is angry about. This is not what God is upset about when it comes to the covetousness of the wealthy. And I could say the covetousness of the poor, because poor people are also covetous. All right, let's look at something else. How about this opportunism? It's what Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations, he talks about, you know, prices go up when need goes up, you know, and demand and what have you. Well, what happens when all of a sudden you have a disaster happens and all of a sudden, you know, regular commodities are worth a lot of money? Like a loaf of bread, they talk about the loaf of bread is worth, you know, its weight in gold. And it would be, folks. You can come to the point where a loaf of bread would be worth its weight in gold. Well, what happens then? You have lots of it. What do? You know, you take advantage. Why? Because the price has gone up. This is just economics, man. This is capitalism. You hoarded the bread. Now you got the bread. Now everybody's hungry, and they got to come to you. Price and demand. Supply and demand. That's the idea. Supply and demand. And they got to come to you. And so what? The value is a whole lot more. You can get rich. Now, wouldn't it be wrong? Wouldn't it be wrong to take advantage of a situation like that and make a lot of money? Make a killing because people are in a bad situation. Yeah, it gets a little bit of gray area here. Look at Genesis. Not seeing it, I'm just going to have to find it. I think it's in Genesis 40 or 41. Look at okay, look at verse 34. I'm sorry, Genesis 41. Let's look at verse 30. Verse 29. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it's because this thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land in the seven plenteous years, and let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. This is a classic case of opportunism. You have inside information. This is called insider trading. You have inside information that we're going to have 7 years of plenty, and then we're going to have 7 years of famine. And so what we're going to do is, we're going to tax the land, we're going to take 20% of everything they make for these 7 years, and then we're going to distribute that. And what wound up happening was, everybody in Egypt wound up losing in their land. Because Pharaoh then wound up selling that corn, and he finally, when they ran out of money, he took their land. And so from then on, Egypt was a communist nation. Everything belonged to Pharaoh. That doesn't really say that's okay. It didn't say that opportunism in this case is okay. Look at Matthew chapter 25. No, Matthew 13. Look at Matthew 13, look at verse 44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a treasure hid in a field, which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath and buyeth that field. Anybody got a problem with that? Somebody walking through your field finds a treasure, hides it, then goes and buys it without telling you why he wants it and why. And he buys it, and then he gets that treasure, and he's rich because he bought that treasure, and he didn't tell you? Does anybody have a problem with that? I got to have a problem with that. And now, Jesus is not saying that this is okay. He's not saying this is a righteous way to act. He's just saying that's how the kingdom of heaven is. It's a very common occurrence. People find out some inside information, and they, you know, do their manipulations or whatever, and then they make a killing on because they knew something. And it used to be legal. Now insider trading is not legal, but it used to be legal. That doesn't necessarily mean it was righteous. Wouldn't it be wrong if I were to sell you a car that I knew something was wrong with and didn't tell you? Wouldn't that be wrong? Well, that's the same thing. That's me taking a price for this car that I know it's not worth that much because I know something you don't know. That's what insider trading is. That's what opportunism is. It's where I'm making a deal because I know something you don't know. But you know, this is a gray area because don't we all know something somebody else doesn't know? Don't we all use our information and get a little bit ahead? It's getting rich at the expense of others. You see, this idea of obscene profits at the extreme disadvantage of some people. The Bible mentions this many, many times. It's wrong. It's just wrong. It's the idea of I'm going to make a killing on something because I... And listen, folks, just because it's our American way doesn't mean it's right. I'm sorry if you're a real patriot and you say, well, this is the way we were founded. This is how we do things. I'm sorry. I'm just going to try to tell you what I see the Bible says. And there is a problem with you taking advantage of somebody who is in dire straits, in dire need. Like, for example, when Jesus talks about usury, do you know how often the Bible talks about usury? All the way through it. It's a constant thing. Look at some of them. I wasn't going to go into that this day, but I will. Look at Deuteronomy 23:20. I'm running out of time. Deuteronomy 23:20. Unto a stranger thou mayest lend upon usury, but unto thy brother thou shalt not lend upon usury, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all that thou settest thine hand to in the land whither thou goest to possess it. Very clear commandment. You can charge interest when you loan money to a stranger, but you can't charge interest when you loan money to your brother, a fellow Jew. Look at Exodus 22, verse 25. Exodus 22:25. If thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as a usurer, neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. If thou at all take thy neighbor's raiment to pledge, it's like collateral, thou shalt deliver it unto him by that the sun goeth down, for that is his covering only. It is his raiment for his skin. Wherein shall he sleep? And it shall come to pass when he crieth unto me that I will hear, for I am gracious. Notice what God is saying. You got somebody who is in dire need, and he comes to you and says, I need a loan. says you're not going to charge him interest. And if you make him give something to you as a pledge that he'll pay it back, don't, if it's raiment, something he needs, don't you even let the sun go down. You get it back to him. Why? He's trying to tell you, you got to understand, it's not right for you to take advantage of someone who is poor, who has no other options. It's wrong. There is a deep, abiding wrong in you taking advantage of somebody who is destitute. Now, obviously, he's saying that's not the same case when we're talking about people who are wanting to, you know, do an investment or something like that. They want to borrow some money, or they want you to invest with them and what have you. Interest is not wrong. Jesus himself mentions that he wants his own with interest. He's not against interest. He's not against increase. He's not against profit. He's not against gain. Even though the vast majority of times the Bible talks about economic gain in the Bible, it uses a word like dishonest or filthy. Filthy lucre. That's like their favorite word. Filthy lucre. Filthy gain. So there is a problem with the way some people use gain. And that's what he's saying here. But I think here the principle is involved in that it's not wrong to be profitable. It's not wrong to make a profit. But it would be wrong to take advantage of someone who is destitute because they have no choice. They've got to come to you. I've got a problem. You know, my wife is sick and I've got to take her to the doctor and I don't have the money to pay the doctor. So a whole lot of principles can just go out the window right then. It has to do with being like God. He said, I want you to be like that. And many other places it says that. We don't have a lot of time. I just want to tell you, there are an awful lot of things that are not covetousness. Profit's not covetousness. Wealth is not covetousness. Look at Proverbs chapter 30, and we'll close with this. Proverbs chapter 30. Look at verse 8. Remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. Lord, don't give me poverty. Nobody wants to be poor. There's no value in going around begging for your food. There's no value in being poor, being destitute. There's no value in that. There is no spiritual plane that you walk on by being poor and hungry. Many people have been poor and hungry, but that doesn't mean they were more spiritual than those rich people. But he says, give me neither poverty nor wealth. Is that what you ask for when you scratch off your lottery ticket? You say, Lord, give me neither poverty nor wealth. I could use just enough. I know there's people who scratch off their lottery ticket, they're saying, I want riches. I want that $500 million prize. I don't know if I told y'all about that lady who won the lottery. She won it. She was one letter off of the millions, but she got $1,500 for a $10 ticket. And she was depressed. She was so depressed. I said, you mean you spent $10 and made $1,500 and you came to work depressed? Yes. I was that close to having millions. Listen, there is a problem with covetousness. It gets under our skin. It causes us a problem. But there's an awful lot of things that we don't want to confuse with it. So, breathe easy for a moment and say, I have to work hard. I have to have savings. I have to provide for my own. I have to take care of my things. And yet, at the same time, remember, God is telling you there's something else involved here. And that's what we're going to try to keep dealing with next week.